The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast, coming to you from the Greater Miami Water Ski Club as we get ready for the last pro tournament of the water ski pro tour season here. I'm Tony Lightfoot, glad to have your support, and also I've got Rob Hazelwood here. So how's things going with you, Rob?
Hello, they're going very good, thank you. Excited to be here.
Excellent, excellent. And so you've just arrived within about the last few hours, and your season up to this point has been I would say pretty good. I mean, you've had one or two wins this season. I mean, those must give you pretty good excitement.
I think if you'd have told 10-year-old Rob that he was going to win something and he just said that it wasn't the best year, he'd be strongly lying. So yeah, I mean, two wins on the season, fairly consistent, struggled the last few events, but yeah, it's been a hell of a season and a fantastic start, awesome through Europe, and then having a few challenges through the end of the season, but that's life in the sport.
Indeed, being consistent out there on the slalom course is one of the hardest things you can do. I mean, you instantly agree with that. Yeah. So tell us about your first win of the season. That was Lake 38,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, first, I mean, the main thing started at Swiss coming second. That was crazy. Awesome start. You know, you can't dream of anything better. Starting that first tournament, you've had 6 months off, you haven't competed, you're on a new ski, this, that. Everything's gone through your head, and it's like, oof, let's see how this is going to go. And that went fantastic with a second. And then LCQs went shockingly, was nowhere near kind of qualifying, really. I mean, I got threes, but you needed more.
That was the LCQ that, I mean, the conditions weren't all that great. I mean, they were shocking.
Got windy. Yeah, well, it got windy through. They were fine through me. It was just after me, actually. It got horrendous. It was, I mean, the way that Hancock rolls, it's quite open on that far side, but if that wind turns, you get a little bit of protection in the course. And I remember running my first pass, I had to go out at 35 to do anything. I was like, I'm not gonna run my 39. Like, I nearly missed my 35, and the wind luckily turned for me, so I managed to get through 39 tail, and I got three at 41, should have done more. And then I think Joel that got the last good round, and then it just turned to absolute hell. No one got through anything. But yeah, either way, that's not... I skied pretty bad in LCQs, really. And then Lake 38, yeah, first win. I mean, kind of felt like it came out of nowhere after a few low weeks. Missing masses, obviously, watching that on the sidelines, that was a little bit frustrating. And yeah, just everything went right. Ended up in a runoff, a three-way tie for first, and ended up coming out on top. So dreams come true.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I suppose at that point, you know, I mean, at that point in the season, having a win under your belt against some top class opposition, what was kind of going through your mind at that point? You were like thinking, okay, this season could be on here.
Yeah, I mean, I've luckily had all of my seasons on tour have started well, very luckily. I mean, it's not great if things start out badly. I've always, even when I came into the start of the season not feeling great, I've always managed to have some success early on. So I was ready for the turn down. I was like, it kind of came. I think I got three every round, I think two and a half, one of them I tried to turn it. So I was like, okay, we're consistent, we're moving on. But at the end of the day, it was only one tournament. We have four or five more. We had 10 or 11 probably more to go in the season. So I knew that the season was going to be very long. And obviously with all the Europe tour, it was then a fight to find and keep the setup that was going to get you all the way through Europe with no practice, six sites and 4 weeks. And yeah, then the goal kind of moves on, you know?
Yeah, and you say Europe, but Europe and Africa.
Yeah, obviously. It's all kind of groups into the Euro tour in my head. Yeah, it's, I mean, it was fantastic to travel. And first one being Morocco after 2 weeks at home in the cold. It was awesome.
Followed your vlog, and it's pretty eye opening. I do have to say, you know, with the footage that you're able to gather, you know, and able to piece together into a story that people can easily follow.
Yeah, I try. Obviously, to me, it's I've seen it, so it's like, oh, it is what it is. But obviously, I know I've been told by a lot of people, I'm very lucky to live the life that I live. You know, the places we can go, the sites that we can see, the fact that we got to ski, I think I skied 5, everyone else skied 6 sites in 4 weeks, different boats, different drivers. So there was a lot going on behind the scenes, and a lot that you're never going to see just from, even though TWBC is obviously an awesome webcast, there's a lot going on that you don't see. So
yeah,
I try just kind of bring that to the forefront with the help of HRO, and yeah, and they've supported me all the way through, and yeah, hope you guys all enjoyed it.
Yeah, indeed. We've enjoyed that vlog that you published on the HO Sports YouTube channel. You know, it looks very, very well done, I've personally enjoyed it, and so have a lot of people out there. So let's move a little bit from Africa, Morocco, to the stops in Europe, and you know, a little up and down there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I made every final, which at the end of the day was a huge deal. I think every single cut you needed a 3. I don't know about Sanjiv. I wasn't there at Sanjiv Azio. I had my cousin's wedding.
Oh yeah, I remember.
But every single cut that I was involved with, other than Oxford, which was obviously more challenging conditions, you needed a 3. So yeah, the cuts were incredibly hard all the way through. I made every single one, and I think I had some fifths. I think I had maybe a 6 or 5th in Funglis, and I didn't have quite the consistency of top finishes that I wanted, but I was incredibly happy to make every single final, which was, I mean, not easy at all. And then obviously the win in Botas, that was, again, phenomenal. You never quite know if you're going to get one. So the like buses, one came, the second one came at the same time. So
yeah,
I was pretty through the roof on that one.
Being able to navigate your way through those tournaments, and also to manage the emotional roller coaster that goes along with it, you know, this sport has incredible highs. I mean, when you win, it you feel like you're on top of the world. But if you don't make it to the second day, then you
walk home empty-handed and with an ego in your hand. So it's like I say, it is that. And I was very lucky to. I had lows in terms of maybe I didn't compete as well as I wanted to in the final, or there was moments that were annoying, but realistically through Europe I was incredibly happy with how I skied. And again, all of that was vlogged, so it was kind of dual tasking with the camera in hand. And and looking back, I have so many fond memories. Especially every year I have so many fond memories, but this trip, it went about as well as it could have done. I mean, we travel often as a team, and pretty much every single event, I think there was very few events where one of us didn't even make the final. So we had an incredibly good team trip. Everyone that was traveling together, we all skied rather bloody well all the way through, and it made the whole trip pretty awesome.
That was Europe. North America.
I didn't do California because I wanted to be back home. We have the ski school back home, and I wanted to spend some time there. Obviously, I can't go off gallivanting all the time. But yeah, we had nationals at my home site back home, and I just wanted to be there. It's an awesome event. There's a ton of people that showed up. I think we had the most entries ever at a nationals this year. So
which is an encouraging sign going forward.
Yeah, because the nationals is ran at Oxford for the last like 2 or 3 years, which has 2 lakes, so they, and then we obviously have the one, so everyone that's come to the last 2 has all of a sudden come to a lake with come to a place with 1 lake. So it was incredibly busy, but it was an awesome tournament. So I had to miss out on California, and it's a very long way to go for one event. Obviously, with them not being able to figure out the dates with Hilltop, it made they're going a very long way for one trip. So I decided to miss out on that and stay a little more rested. Started off at Mastercraft Pro because I was about 4 weeks in between that and Mastercraft Pro. And then Mastercraft Pro felt awful, skied really well, ended up 4th place, which was the big surprise.
I mean, that was the most surprising one of all, because I mean, you just said to yourself, you just said you felt like absolute awful, but you still
it was challenging, and I wasn't the only one, so it's kind of like, then it's a battle of the wits, and who's just going to hold on? You know, you got to get the shoulder involved, you got to attack, and I was honestly really happy to get dialed in there and get the score that was needed, and then it kind of went downhill from there. Travers Grand Prix, don't know what the hell happened. I felt really, really good. The complete opposite. I felt amazing, and then just couldn't get out of one at 41, which was frustrating. And obviously last weekend, King of Darkness, the scores were through the roof, and I just couldn't quite get... I got the three, turned the three, which is a fairly big deal for me, but just couldn't quite figure it out. So here we are, Miami, finishing off the year, and hoping for a good finish before we all head off home.
Well, there you go, and like former English footballer, the late Jimmy Greaves used to say, it's a funny old game.
It's a real nightmare. The consistency is just so hard. I mean, with water conditions, this, that, I'm very grateful to have the support of a lot of people that can kind of guide me through all that, you know, and grateful for how much I've been able to learn over the last few years and try and make the challenges of... I mean, an 8-9 month season a little bit easier.
All right, then. So as we go towards the tail end of the podcast, as I have done with my previous podcast here at Greater Miami, you get to choose the last 10 questions. So pick a card and give it to me. And the first question is... Have you ever had a this can't be happening moment, and what was it?
I think that was probably like 38. That's the only time I've probably been a little bit emotional in the sport. I had a three, I knew I'd beaten Freddie, but Cole McCormick is Mr. Four, he gets four all the time, and I was stood, I have a video of it actually, you can very much see that, I can't believe it in my eyes. I stood behind the deck, I wasn't even watching because I'm like, oh, he's going to get four, I'm going to have to go again. Didn't even unbutton my gloves, and John was behind me, started cheering, and that was pretty insane, and I think first Masters was a close one, like Open Masters, to make that was insane, but yeah, that first win was pretty something I'll never forget.
Yeah, and it almost reminded me of Lucas Cornell a little bit, you know, with his win at the Travers Grand Prix.
He deserved that one.
Absolutely. Okay, pick another card. Okay, just happens to be the top one. And when you were a kid, did you have any posters on your wall? If so, what?
I don't think I did. We had posters a lot over the lake. But in terms of my wall, I think the only thing I would have was, I remember Freddy Krueger, actually, the first, I think it was Cray Valley back then, it became the Stoke Pram. The first ever one that we did, Freddie came over, and we always tried to house people on site, so in the caravans on the stuff, so people were able to have quite a cheap trip. You book the flight, we cover most everything else, and Freddy Krueger actually came over the first year we ever did it, and he slept in my bed. I obviously didn't sleep in my bed, I slept somewhere else, but he then gave us a hand sign. My mum printed off a picture with a little bit of piece of paper, and he signed the note and gave us a little note, and I looked at that a lot, and Freddy Krueger obviously is one of the most respected, and still is.
Yeah,
the most respected skier of all time. I mean, that guy's just insane. So, yeah, that would be the closest thing I had probably to a poster in my room. And yeah, that was something that that stuck with me for quite a while.
So no posters of David Beckham or Ryan Giggs or anything like that?
Not a big footballer.
There we go. All right, there, pick one. And this card has this question. Do you have a favorite number? Any particular reason why you like that number?
Numbers is a tricky one. I always like seven, you know, most rolled on a dice. That's my slight addiction to backgammon over the last week coming in. I don't know, probably not a lucky number. I mean, six, I guess, six boys, that's what we're all looking for, so I have to go with that one.
All right, then, so six it is. There we go. There's another card. If you could have anything named after you, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know, I mean... feel like a ski would be pretty cool, you know, or like a chocolate bar. I do love chocolate. It must be a chocolate bar, a Rob Hazelwood style chocolate bar, a little Marvelous Creations esque.
Well, let me tell you that I've got a chocolate bar named after me. It's the Tony Chocolone.
Tony Chocolone. Yeah, chocolate. We'll go with that one.
Or you could have a name, a lake named after
a lake
you.
Named after. I mean, Hazelwood Ski World. That's, I'm halfway there. Got the second bit.
All right then, Navacard. And what's the longest you've ever waited in line for something, and what was it? And I'm going to tell you right now, waiting at the airport in line does not count.
That's been a long one. You know what it was? We first went to Aquatica. If anyone's been to Aquatica, the ride that you go on and you see the dolphins in the tube, and you go through like a little clear bit of the tube, and you fly down. And we literally, it just opened. So we waited in this queue. They said it was half an hour. It was like 2-3 hours.
It's like Bermuda, right? Or Bahamas.
It's called. But no, Aquatica in Orlando. And kids. It was a water park, and we queued up for this ride for like 3 hours. And we were so excited to see these dolphins in this tube, and you fly down it. That's the most disappointing ride I've ever been on, but that's probably it.
And you wait all day for it.
Yeah.
All right, then pick a card. All right, then. So if you're a villain or a criminal mastermind, what would be your calling card? What would be something that you leave behind to tell them, yeah, that's me?
I feel like it'd just have to be a little silhouette of my own side, just waving at someone, just like turning and arm in the air, over my head, reaching.
For those of you of a certain vintage, that almost sounds like, you know, the, you know, all because the lady loves milk tray.
I have no idea. But yeah, little silhouette of the onside, because I feel like Whitney and Terry do it pretty well, but I feel like mine's a little more can be a little more extreme sometimes.
I do like that silhouetted picture of Matteo Luzzeri, you know, was taken from Bennett. All right there. So have you ever had a weird Uber experience?
I don't take that many Ubers, actually. I'm very lucky to not have to do a ton of that, I guess. I once had an Uber where the guy, I think I'd just come back from Chile, so I was in my Spanish mood, and he was picking me up from Orlando Airport at like midnight, and he only spoke Spanish. I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a go, and we spoke Spanish the whole ride. So I spent half the ride having no idea what he was saying, but we had a lovely, it's a long ride from Orlando to Jax as well. It was like an hour of my Spanish conversation. That was probably the most fun I've had in an Uber.
Okay, so I mean, you went out your way to speak Spanish or to learn Spanish. I mean,
got to use it.
I'm trying Italian for the next world. All right, there. If you could bring one famous person back from the dead, who would you pick?
One famous person back from the I don't know. It's tough because I feel like I don't massively like idolize famous people in a way. I honestly don't know if I have an answer for that one. Who would I bring back from the dead? Who's died? That was like, oh, sad. I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer for
rock
that
star
one.
Or singer, you know, or someone who's kicked the bucket in the last year or two. I don't know.
My grandma was a pretty big rock star. She'd probably have to be on there, I think. We'll go with that one.
Oh, how sweet.
Look at that.
There we go. Two cards remain. Which one? The right card. And the right card says, describe your sense of humor. In one word, I'm going to love this answer.
Describe your sense of humor. Just a bit stupid and annoying, probably. Energy. We'll go with that. My
energetic.
Yeah, probably a bit stupid.
Energetic sense of humor. Okay. Which brings us to card number 10. What is your favorite microwavable food?
Oh, microwavable food. Oh, God. This is tricky. My 3 years in culinary school would argue against using microwaves for some stuff. What do I cook in a microwave? Leftovers. I mean, leftovers have to be
food prep.
Just a little bit of pasta shaken up. She's the one, I guess. But everything's better in a pan, unfortunately.
There you go. That's culinary school where Rob Hazelwood giving you some sage advice at the end. To put the button on this latest edition of the TWBC podcast, anything you want to say in closing, thanks, what have you?
I guess thank you for a lot of people that support me along the way. I mean, HR Sports wouldn't be able to do this without them. Jack Travers for giving me a place to train and stay and just been generally awesome. The whole Travers family, John, Will, Jamie, girlfriend back home. There's a lot of people in this that ski with me and support me along the way. And obviously family, mum and dad. And there's a hell of a lot of stuff and people that that let us do what we do and help us do it. So yeah, thank you to everyone who's ever had a little hand in it.
All right, and that puts the button on this edition of the TWBC podcast. I'm a big thanks to Rob Hazelwood, and my name is Tony Lightfoot, and as always, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.